And if I'm guilty, it means that I am the ultimate figure to fear.
Hello, podcast listeners. My name is Nolan Sorensen, and for the past 2 weeks, I have questioned why two documentary filmmakers made the stylistic choices in their documentary titled Amanda Knox. More specifically, how even when they had the full timeline of how the facts were unveiled, they chose to craft the narrative of the movie in a different way. Now, I'm just a student, but I have scoured every minute of the film and spent a lot of time learning about how people tell stories. And through my research, I've discovered it's the way people tell stories, not what the story is about, that truly has an impact on what the listeners take away from it. Here's the case I've been working on. In 2016, Rod Blackhurst and Brian McGinn released a documentary chronicling the events and the trial of the suspects involved in the murder of Meredith Kircher in Italy in 2007. Although the actual case featured multiple suspects, the documentary focused on Meredith Kircher's roommate, Amanda Knox, and her boyfriend, Raffaele Sollecito. When I first watched the movie, I truly thought Amanda and Raffaele were guilty, until just after halfway through the film. After that point, I was appalled at how the case was handled, and adamant that Amanda was innocent. This dichotomy was intentionally created by Rod and Brian, and in this podcast, we will answer the question why. For what purpose does giving viewers opposing opinions serve? To understand their motives, we first have to unpack the methods used by the filmmakers to make viewers create opinions about each person. In this episode, we will focus on the rhetoric that made Amanda and Raffaele seem guilty. First, Blackhurst and McGinn appeal to ethos by using statements that undermine the credibility of Raffaele. One of the first appeals to ethos was the choice to interview Raffaele Sollecito in English. This tactic undermines his credibility because Raffaele's English is not great and makes him seem bumbling and not put together.
And there was this girl alone. She was very, very pretty. And she, when I looked at her, she looked at me back.
It is clear that Raffaele did not have to be interviewed in English, as the prosecutor, Giuliano Bignini, speaks entirely in Italian with English subtitles throughout the movie. Presenting Raffaele this way hints to viewers that they should treat him as unreliable, because his broken English makes him seem dumb and gullible, like someone who would be easily susceptible to coercion from the true murderer. Right away, the filmmakers get the viewers to disregard any of Sollecito's information because it is unlikely to be reliable. Blackhurst and McGinn not only use ethos to undermine Raffaele, they also use it to bolster the credibility of the public and prominent experts. The most prominent expert featured in the first portion of the film is the prosecutor, Giuliano Bignini.
Io ho avuto sempre una grande passione per l'investigazione.
He's well-spoken, speaks beautiful Italian, is knowledgeable, but he's still the prosecutor on the case. Viewers are forced to pay attention to the subtitles in order to understand his every word, yet he is already inclined to believe that Amanda is guilty because he's working to build a case against her. In this first half of the documentary, the viewers receive much of their facts through Bignini's lens. Bignini should really be viewed as a flawed narrator due to his approach to his job. One of the first times viewers are introduced to him, he states that he loves detective movies such as Sherlock Holmes. Bignini then goes on to claim,
una donna,
a woman who is killed,
al delitto,
tends to cover the body of female victims.
Donna.
All'uomo a, uno a man would never think to do this.
Questa cosa.
Bignini is clearly influenced by his favorite detective, and it is shocking that a hunch could be presented with such authority. However, I am sure that many viewers, myself included, ate this up and built an early prejudice against Amanda. In addition to calling into question Knox's credibility, the filmmakers appealed to pathos by using reporting regarding Amanda Knox's background to demonize her. Amanda Knox was persecuted by the media, and therefore the public, for facts about her life that did not relate to the case, but rather suggested that she could be capable of murder. Although the majority of her background was developed fairly in the documentary to give context for the case, they harped on a couple of key points that were unrelated to the case. One of the first points was that Amanda and Raffaele smoked pot. The filmmakers even have a picture of her with a joint. And the second was that Amanda was very open sexually.
She devil with an angel face, heartless manipulator, concertante of sex.
Although these are not the same as murder, having the appearance that she enjoys partaking in illegal or taboo activities helps the audience make the jump from innocent foreign student to murderer. These narratives, despite not having the direct relevance to the case, help sway the public opinion at the time, and still work today to persuade the viewers. By the time the documentary was released, the Meredith Kircher case had concluded and both Knox and Solicito had been acquitted. So then why did Rob and Brian choose to present the facts of the case in this manner? Some people say that this documentary is about how the media and the public perpetrated a witch hunt against Amanda. But would it not make more sense to lead with the fact that she was innocent, to make viewers angry at the wrongdoings of the police and the media? To answer these questions, I think we need more information. Tune in next episode, where I'll analyze the shift in rhetoric in the second half of the movie.